That's too high-tech for me.
Yeah, you're just a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure what that's doing, Dan. It's making me nervous.
We want to accredit you.
So in any event, Pastor wanted us to think more about the number 7. And of course, if you've taken classes from Pastor Waterstrat in the past, you know, he always asks what two numbers add up to 7. And he wants the answer 3 and 4. I want to give the answer 6 and 1 just to be a smart aleck every now and then.
Or 5 and 2.
Yeah. Or -14 and 21 or something like that.
3 and a half.
So in any event, he asks in question 1 the meaning of number 7. Any thoughts on that? What do you think the number 7 means?
Everything.
Complete the whole thing. Right? Yeah. The pastor wants the answer 3 plus 4 because 3 is the number of
God
and
the number of the earth.
4 corners of the earth, right? Yeah. There's, I think I saw a hand over here.
I think it's also the number of the covenant because it's a symbol between God and man and the covenant.
Right. That was one of the comments that Pastor Waterstrat made here in his notes, is it's the number that represents the covenant throughout Scripture. So it's the idea of it's a completeness and a harmony between God and man. And so we see the number 7 repeated throughout the creation account. We have the 7 days of creation. And Pastor asked the question, what is the meaning of the phrase, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day, the second day, etc.? Yeah?
That was how the Israelites demarcated their days, and they actually started in the evening and ended in the morning. So my God, the Moses
was inspired
to write it.
Right.
So there was only 1 day.
Right, correct. In the Hebrew way of reckoning time, the Jewish way of reckoning time, a day starts in the evening and concludes in the morning. That's why when, even to the present day, when Jews celebrate the Passover starts sundown of the particular day in the calendar. You have trouble hearing me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try to yell a little bit louder. Also, Pastor wanted to point out that the phrase that's repeated over and over, and there was evening and there was morning, the first day, the second day, etc. In the Hebrew, in their language, they count with cardinal numbers. That is 1, 2, 3, 4. But in English, especially in the earliest English translations, we regarded that as awkward. It is kind of awkward grammar in English to say in the evening and the morning it was day 1. So even in the earliest King James translations, the translators went from day 1 to the first day. Now what's important about that is in the Hebrew, they continue in the original writings. Day 1 and day 2 and day 3 are used consistently throughout. And what we take from that is it was a 24-hour period. So how does that square with the idea of evolution, or some folks who want to read and it was the first day and the second day as an eon? Is it consistent or inconsistent? What do you think? It's kind of an easy one. It's inconsistent, right? But is it a direct? Does that mean that evolution is refuted here directly? Pastor, in his notes, says it's not, but it certainly is inconsistent. And also, we see in other areas throughout the creation story some suggestions that the creation account here is inconsistent with the theory of evolution. Under item 2B, Pastor talks about when God created the world, it was formless and empty. And that phrase gives God his task in creating the world and the universe. He asks us to go over to the chart on the next page in the worksheet. And if we remember that the earth was formless and empty, we see that there are 3 days of forming and 3 days of filling. So on day one, what did God form? Paul?
Light.
Okay. What else did he form? What does the light represent? We talked about this a little bit last week. What does light represent in modern kind of scientific terms? Yeah.
Energy,
right. Day two, what does God create?
Sky and water.
Sky and water.
Yeah.
What would be a modern kind of scientific term for that? So the sky,
what would
atmosphere, right. And it's really more of a water distribution system. Day three, what did God create? This is a day of forming, right? I hear land, right?
Seas.
And seas, right? He separated land from the seas. And by seas, I think is meant not just the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, et cetera, but rivers and lakes and so forth. It's the whole water system that we see on the face of the earth. He also created something to go on land on day three. It's a little bit of filling that occurred on day three. Vegetation, right. Then on day four, the days of filling begin. What on day four does God create? Sun and moon, right, the light producers. Now, if you were a skeptic, you might think, all right, so on day one, God created light by speaking, let there be light, and all of a sudden there's light from the darkness. But it's not till day four that he creates the things that produce light, the sun and the moon. How could that be?
Is that God can do anything.
Right. That's a good answer.
You put his hand like this and the light comes off of it.
Right. You can imagine a skeptic, though, reading this and thinking, oh, for crying out loud, this just means it's a fairy tale, right? How can God create light on day one and then wait until the fourth day to create the sun and the moon? Yeah.
I thought it was like heaven, because it says in heaven you won't need the sun and the moon because God will provide the light.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was just a... something he did later.
Right.
He can provide light without sun and moon.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of question is kind of, if you're having a conversation with somebody who's not a believer, not a Christian, and they raise a question like that, you have to kind of take a deep breath and be patient with them and be gentle with them, but it's kind of a silly question. Makes me think of a long time ago when I was watching Superman at the theater. Superman did something amazing. I think it was that scene where he was flying around some planet out in outer space and cooled it off or something like that. And there was this guy sitting down the row from me, goes, "No way! This is Superman, for crying out loud." And so, I mean, this is God. If God decided to create light from darkness and then 3 days later to create the sun and the moon, who are we to question his wisdom in doing it in that way? Yeah.
Is it possible, since our knowledge, our brain can accept only this much, when light is leading to the starting point, which our interpretation in many, many languages, especially in the Hebrew, at least it stops. Light, if we study evolution also, it means this atmosphere is full of systems. In that fourth day when he mentioned sun and moon, it means the earth will belong to this one, that this will be I need to you, and there is no need there. But other, it creates so huge, which till now, you and I still don't know what is in this big place. Even after Copernicus or Ptolemaeus find out that we circle the sun and moon circle the earth, changing from Copernicus to Ptolemaeus, and then we have the system, hey, the earth is kind of like round, you know, and blah, 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 continue. But still, God show us your knowledge. You still don't know what you are. Just follow me and I'll tell you later. But that's the starting. Day one, the beginning. The end, he is the one more. I don't know. We don't know. We still question it. But that's how great the Lord is, which we sometimes don't want to accept that because we thought we are too smart because we have our PhD.
Yeah, it is amazing how arrogant human beings can be. I was listening to a radio interview just this week with biology professor that Pastor Waterstrat has mentioned in classes in the past, Michael Behe. He's an MIT biology professor who believes in the creative design as recorded in Genesis. And what they're finding is that as they get into the real small molecular biology, that it's so complex to think that these complexities could arise at random is it's almost a mathematical impossibility. And this is a real scientist. There's a whole group of scientists who follow him who are starting to develop the science to support the idea of a creator and a overall design of creation that is inconsistent with the idea, the random idea of evolution. It is really kind of fascinating. All right, let's move on here. Pastor is asking us, I think we were on day four, talking about the light producers that God created in day four. So day five, another day of filling. What did God create?
Fish and birds.
Fish and birds.
But I noticed you wanted us to do this in pencil, so I'm assuming I have somebody wrong.
Well,
he made that statement.
He says here, what he wrote down is creatures in the air and creatures in the seas. It sounds like fish and birds to me. Yeah. Day six, what did God create?
Livestock, all the land animals.
All the land animals, right.
Right.
And then man and woman, right, in day six. One thing that's not mentioned is the whole insect world. I suppose that's included in creatures that move along the ground. That would be snakes and lizards and insects, I would suppose. So overall, what I think is important to understand is we've got 3 days of forming. Remember, the earth was formless and empty. And so God formed in the first 3 days of creation, and he filled in the second 3 days of creation. Okay? No.
One thing I read an article that says that our galaxy travels at 480,000 miles an hour, circle, fast, 480,000 miles an hour, our galaxy.
Yeah.
And it takes 200 million years to make one revolution.
Wow.
That is a lot of galaxy.
That is a lot of galaxy.
In fact, the other scientist said there's as many stars. He thinks there's as many stars in the sky as sand grains on all the seashores of Earth. So, and it's in perfect form. I mean, it's amazing.
It is amazing. It's hard to wrap your mind around those kind of numbers.
Yeah. One revolution.
All right, Pastor asks us here, what is the significance of resting on the last day? And how does that relate to the meaning of number seven? So the creation account tells us on the seventh day God rested. What's the significance of that?
Well, after all Brandy. That work, he has to be tired.
He needed a day off? Is that in his union contract or something?
Yeah. I mean, I know what he did after 5 days of work. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's an example for us to rest and think about God and everything he's done for us.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Sure. Because God had already planned that so good in his mind that they will create somebody in his plan, that the leader will create that human being. If he didn't put that stop, this creation, the one he created as their image, will be more getting smarter, try to be like God, really. Non-stop. If we non-stop, we will say why. We need to stop some way or any time. Have you ever worked for 3 times 24? If you are a military, you need that. Run ready. Okay. Work 7 days non-stop, you will be ready.
So you think God's setting up here a day that we should take off and rest?
So we can stop. You know, to understand why like that. Because if not, even without that, we human beings try to be God always. We know whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's the problem coming.
Friend.
And I think it also, I think it gives us that day of rest to appreciate what he's done and to worship him. I mean, you know, we have church on Sundays. Some people worship on Saturdays, you know, depends. But I mean, I think that it gives us a breather to reflect on what he's done.
Okay.
And appreciate it and thank him for it.
What about this idea? God spent 6 days forming the universe and the earth and so forth and then filling it. And then he stopped. What does that tell you about the work that he had done in the first 6 days?
He did it.
Yeah.
It is finished.
It was done. It was the way it was supposed to be, right? Okay, I think that's important to take away from that, is that God had formed the universe, the earth, the land, the dry land, and the seas, and then filled all that, and then it was done. It was the way it was supposed to be. He declared it very good. Right.
But he still maintains it.
Yeah.
To this day.
True. It's different now, isn't it?
Yeah, but
than it was then.
He's still in charge of everything.
But there has to be a significance there with it being finished, with Christ dying and it being finished. I mean, it has to, you know, because it was finished then, and when Christ died, it was finished then for our sins.
There's kind of a parallel there, isn't there?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it has to do with, we talked about the number seven and its completeness. And this ties in with that. The seventh day is complete, it's done. Heaven and earth, and all, it's finished as well as that number seven.
It does fit, doesn't it?
It's
yeah.
Complete,
yeah.
Finished, done, perfect.
Can everybody hear that? Okay, good. Paul.
I think it's important that we understand that when we got done, it was perfect.
Yeah.
Everything was done the way God wanted it to be.
Right.
Sin hasn't entered this world yet, and when that happens, things change drastically.
Exactly.
We're not there yet, but when God got done with his creative task of being a creator, he had the perfect world.
Paul made the point that when God was done creating the universe and filling it, he was done. And everything was the way it was supposed to be. It's very difficult for us to imagine how that was. God gives us a few glimpses of how it was throughout the rest of the first few chapters of Genesis. But beyond that, it's almost beyond us to imagine what it was like.
In the world we live in today, is not even a reflection on what it was.
Right, exactly.
We need to understand that we're not living in a world that God intended it.
Precisely. Also, I think it's important, kind of dovetailing what Vera said, this is the seventh day that God rested. Again, that takes us back to the idea of the covenant. Remember, seven is sort of the biblical representation of the covenant between God and man. Everything is the way it was supposed to be on this seventh day. And the covenant is God's promise to us to restore the world back to the way He intended it. Pastor asked us to think about later on, we'll see some notes here, about the first three chapters of Genesis and the last three chapters of Revelation. And it's fascinating how they are, in ways, mirror images of each other. The first three chapters of Genesis deal with God creating a perfect world, and then man sinning and ruining that perfection. And then the last three chapters of Revelation deal with what the new heaven and the new earth will be like. And they are mirror images of each other. It is really quite fascinating. We'll see some notes that Pastor makes about that in a few minutes. Now, Pastor asks us to also think about, in question three, what phrase, repeated seven times, signals every one of God's creative acts? And what does it mean to you, or what does it say to you, that phrase that's repeated over and over seven times?
God saw good.
And God saw it was good. Okay, that is one thing that's repeated seven times, but there's another.
God said,
right. Right. So it's the power of the Word that brings everything into creation. I suppose God could have snapped His fingers or waved His hand and brought everything into creation, but that's not how He did it. I believe every one of the days begins with, "And God said," and that's repeated seven times throughout this account. Question four asks, there's a sevenfold repetition of the phrase "according to its kind." What does that say about creation? Right.
So that it could be perpetuating.
Right. We don't have frogs and birds combining in some evolutionary process to produce giraffes in the final end. Right. Yeah. Everything is to reproduce according to its kind. Also, let's remember when this was written. I believe it was written around 1500 BC, somewhere around there. At the time that the children of Israel were leaving Egypt in the Exodus, what was the Egyptians' view of nature? Think about some of the symbols that we associate with Egypt. Think of the Sphinx, for example.
Many gods.
Many gods, and what was their view of nature in general? They worshipped it, and they also regarded it as being somewhat out of control. Think of the Sphinx. What do you have, a man's head on a lion's body, if I remember right? So there are other Egyptian symbols similar to that, where there's a fusion of...
It's a bird's head on some animal with four legs.
Right. There are a number of Egyptian symbols like that, where they put together disparate... beings from nature, and it gives you the idea that nature is out of control. I think this stands in direct contrast to that. It does suggest a nature that is orderly. Things will reproduce according to their kind. We won't have lions and men, or birds and cats, or whatever, which was the Egyptian view of nature. Yeah, Paul.
Everything had a purpose, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul's comment is that everything has a purpose. It's difficult for us to figure that out now. I mean, that's probably one of the great questions of modern life is, what is the meaning of it all, to be or not to be? Well, here's some answers to that question right here. Yeah.
Imagine, is it possible also, in that order, when they say, according to Christ, it means God creation is so good, and that God is a good person, not the one scary like the other big country before, or who doesn't believe in him, like the body is a lion, the head is an eagle or something. It's the symbol of many, many countries during that time. It's the power, it's something they worship, but a scary person. That if you don't do this, they will come to you at night and take your eye or kill you. That's the worship of people during the pagan era. God is something that will make you up if you don't do good. But our God, to show, is a kind. Kind is kind word also, nice, good. That he is a good who create us. Anything you trouble, you can go to him to comfort yourself. And that's my interpretation can be in this kind.
I think it can be, yeah. I mean, we see here in the creation account a God of grace and a God of love. Look at how he created the universe. He did it in a way that we humans can at least in some way relate to. He did it with words, that we speak words, different from all the other creatures that God made. The animals don't communicate in words, we do. And God chose language, the word, to create the universe. I think you can see in that God's grace. He did it in a way that we can relate to and understand in at least some small way. All right. Pastor asks over on the question 4C, again, about the language according to its kind. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but that's repeated 7 times, according to its kind. How does that relate to the question of evolution? Yeah.
Well, the species will not change. They will remain as created because they will only reproduce with their like species. So
right.
You're not going to have evolution.
Right.
Whatever God created, he wanted to remain as he created it.
Right. Yeah, it certainly does not give you the impression that God was creating a nature that had carte blanche to go off on its own and evolve over the eons. There's a sense of orderliness here. And that kind of brings me back to the comments I was making earlier about the MIT biology professor, Professor Behe. That's one of his major points in arguing for a creator and an intelligent design of the universe is that as we get into studying the molecular biology, it's orderly and it's logical and it is certainly is not random at all. And to think that a piece of pond slime could evolve into human beings. I mean, he says when you look at the molecular biology, there's absolutely no way that could happen. So again, according to its kind, repeated 7 times over and over, suggests to us, I think, the orderliness of the universe. Yeah.
Luther points out that even though these trees would then grow from their own seeds, that on this day God created them already bearing fruit with those seeds in it. So, and we see this over and over again, for example, with Adam and Eve being created adults and getting married on their birthday. You know, we see that God created a mature earth already, so it doesn't matter us if they test the dates of different rocks and so on and layers of the earth and say it's such and such millions of years old because God created a mature earth. And see that again.
Right, I think that's a good point. You'll hear skeptics raise the argument that, well, gee, the fossil record suggests that the Earth is much older than the creation account would give us an idea of. It's billions and billions of years old, and there are species that we don't see anymore, and that must be evidence of evolution. I think the point you're making is an excellent one. The trees that God created on the third day when he created vegetation, if you were to cut one down, I think you're probably going to find that there were rings in there. So he created the universe with the appearance of age. Yeah, Chuck.
The same thing applies to the argument that people make about the distant stars and the amount of time it takes the light from the stars to get to the Earth. If the Earth were only thousands of years old, that light wouldn't be here yet. But when you created the universe, you created the stars, you also created the light from those stars on the Earth on that day.
Right.
So it's not like a light to start from those stars and then eventually get there.
Yeah. Brent.
Sign up sheet.
Ah, thank you.
Does that mean that when you believe that he created all the dinosaur fossils and left them there for us to discover?
I don't know what to make of that. I don't know. I think that's one of those points where, you know, it's God. I mean, he did it the way he did it. And
I always thought he died in the flood. Mm-hmm.
What's that?
The
dinosaurs.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. Yeah, Paul.
Well, God's time isn't even an issue in God's language to us. It's the reason he's here and the reason he came here. And the length of time has, we can't comprehend God. God doesn't live in time. We are bothered by it, but God isn't, you know, I don't think.
Yeah, that makes me think of one of the Psalms. I think the psalmist says that a day is like a year to God and a year is like a day, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Chuck mentioned about the stars. When we go out at night, we can see them on the way. The stars in the Milky Way are, as the universe is expanding, the Milky Way is moving out. And if the world were millions or whatever, billions of years old, we wouldn't be able to see the Milky Way. Because we know, we've measured how fast the stars are moving, and they'd be so far out we couldn't even see them anymore. So that's an evidence, a physical evidence that we have that the Earth is young. And it's an argument for a physical argument that we have for creation.
That's a fascinating point. I kind of wonder, as science develops, I doubt that this debate between a intelligent design or God who created the universe and evolution will go away, because it really is more of it's almost a philosophical or a political agenda than a theological or scientific one. And I think that there will be people who will cook up various theories to support evolution probably forever, until the end of time, and there will be scientists who really want to find out what the truth is and what the facts are. And we're probably going to find, as you're suggesting, that there are various things in the universe that support the idea of an intelligent design and a creator. But I bet that debate is never going to go away, unfortunately. It's just part of human nature to want to question what God tells us in his word. All right. In question 5, we have another 7. The phrase, "and God saw that it was good," is repeated 7 times. Now, as I was preparing for this, there's one day here in creation where I believe God does not say that something was good, and that was kind of interesting. We'll get into that maybe in a few minutes if we have time. And then in question 6, Pastor draws out the parallels between the first 3 chapters of Genesis and the last 3 chapters of Revelation. That's worth reading on your own. Look at the first 3 chapters of Genesis and then the last 3 chapters of Revelation, the points that Pastor makes here in A through D are really fascinating, especially the last one, the tree of life in the Garden of Eden, and then there's the tree of life in the new heaven and the new earth. It's as though God wants to recreate Eden for us in the new heaven and the new earth. It's quite a picture. It's a picture of hope. All right, now I think we can skip on down to under the heading the Word. We did the table, the 3 days of forming and the 3 days of filling. And let's look at the first day, picking up at verse 3. I think this is about where we left off last week. We were talking about God speaking the words, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. We've already talked about the phrase, "and God said," at some length earlier. We don't need to do that again. We talked about what light is and what light means. It's interesting here, I think, to get into a little bit of the detail of the language. God, or Genesis, and Moses here uses the word day in these first few verses in two different ways. Verse 5, God called the light day, and then later on in verse 5, and there was evening and there was morning the first day. Now, the commentaries that I read, the word day in Hebrew, in the phrase, "and there was evening and there was morning the first day," is the word in Hebrew that reckons a 24-hour period, not an eon or decades or a period of time longer than a day. It's the very same word that they use for talking about Tuesday or Friday or whatever. It's the 24-hour period demarking a day. Pastor mentions here, question 2, God saw that the light was good. He says this is the first of 7 similar pronouncements, and he tells us where the other 6 are found. He asks, what thoughts does that phrase, "God saw that the light was good," or that sentence, "God saw the light was good," what does that bring to your mind? What does that make you think of? "And it was good," repeated 7 times throughout this account, and finishes, "it was very good." What does that make you think of?
Perfection.
Right. It was the way it was supposed to be. I think it also gives us a sense of what we've lost. We can't imagine the perfection that God put into place, and he declares that it was good. It gives us a sense of what our sins have done. It also gives us a sense of hope as to the new heaven and the new earth. Pastor asks here an interesting question, question 3, going back to this account in particular about the first day. Is it simple-minded to call the light day and the darkness night? Is it simple-minded or old-fashioned to call the light day and the darkness night? Any thoughts on that? The way it was made, okay. Right, and it's also, I think it's a 15th century BC way of speaking about the physics and the science involved in light and energy and the absence of light and energy. But it's also a very apt description. Right? The light was day and the darkness was night. Yeah, Paul.
I think definitely it's simple-mindedness, and that's good.
Right.
Be
yeah.
Simple-minded.
In a way, it is, isn't it?
Simple-minded yeah. Creates a strong faith.
Yeah.
Because it creates
right.
Trust.
Right.
And without that, we become the soul.
Yeah.
We become the soul center of our universe, and God doesn't.
Right. Makes you think of the necessity to have a childlike
right.
faith, right? Yeah.
I'm not sure if I should be offended by this question or not. Because I must be simple-minded, because today I refer to it the same way.
Uh-huh.
That's how I explain it to my kids. That's life is day, and when there is no light, it's night.
Right, it is kind of simple-minded, but it's
right.
Appropriately simple-minded, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah. Compared to God, we are simple-minded.
But God comes to us in ways that we can understand.
Right.
And he doesn't want to make it too complicated, which many scientists try to do. They over-try and simplify it.
Right.
Too deep into it, and he says, no, this is how it is.
Right, well, let's face it, we're kind of stupid when it comes to these things. And I think God does need to keep it simple for us. Yeah.
What he's saying is, the first time there was a day and a night. And it's like if you give somebody that just read a guy woke up out of a coma, and he's 20 years in a coma. And if you show somebody like that a computer, he's going to say, what is it? We're going to say, it's a computer.
Right, yeah.
You know, there's a name for it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing is, you know, when Adam and Eve were formed, and it's a, what's the dark? It's not light. It's day.
Yeah, it kind of brings up the point that Pastor touched on last week, and that is there are skeptics who will argue that the creation account here in Genesis is just like any of the other pieces of epic literature that talk about the creation of the universe. And this week I went back and I was looking at, because that made me think of something that I had read in C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis is probably familiar to most of you. He was an English professor. I think he taught at Oxford. Is regarded as one of the greatest scholars of the 20th century, and what he taught was epic literature. He also happened to be a Christian. He was an atheist at first, and then he converted and came to faith, and he's a Christian. And there was an essay that he wrote that had a couple paragraphs about. It really is kind of silly when he hears philosophers and alleged theologians who question whether the Genesis account is actual history or whether it's epic literature. He said, look, this is my field. I teach epic literature. If you compare this account with the other pieces of epic literature dealing with the creation of the universe, there's no comparison. This simply reads differently. It reads as history. It's really more of a piece of historical writing than it is a piece of epic literature. Most of the point that he makes is most of the other epic literature dealing with the creation of the universe have something fantastic occurring, as in American Indian literature, the earth being borne up by a giant turtle. That's maybe an extreme example, but they all tend to be in that vein. And this just reads completely differently. This is more of an historical account rather than a piece of fantastic literature. So, but I think that the difficulty that our human minds have, they're so limited in thinking about how did all of this come into being, it's a struggle for us. And I think God did keep it simple for that reason. Yeah.
The men that wrote these down were men inspired by God, not their own input. Moses was probably the most unlikely person in the world to write Genesis. If you were to pick somebody to write Genesis, God, why would you pick Moses of all people?
Right.
But he did.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. What did Moses say about himself? I can't speak. Yeah.
In fact,
right.
He couldn't. His brother had to speak.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I think the point when we study the Bible is based on our belief, so we always keep saying, I believe. That's simple it is, because if we can bring that to the argument with our knowledge, it's really so many questions that are hard to solve and make it confused. But if we just believe as it is, just fine. If I live in Norway, talking about the day and night,
is 22 hours day, night, day. So we thought, wow, Lord, must you work so hard, 22 hours and 2 hours evening. Oh, that's during summertime. And then come, it happened, I studied this Genesis in the wintertime. Wow, God is so fast, work 2 hours and sleep 22 hours. This coming up, if I keep bringing the argument about the study of Bible, that's how great in the Lutheran study. It is just, I believe. This is it, just like as a child. You send your child upstairs in the third floor, if you have a three-story house. Okay, daddy or mommy, they don't affect. Oh, there is a spooky or something in there. They didn't ask me. They said, no, my dad tell me there must be safe. Simple. So, we just a simple Lutheran fine. Yesterday, night, evening, first day.
What's the bumper sticker say? God said it, I believe it.
Yeah. Settles it.
Yeah, there's a,
I had one.
A certain amount of wisdom in that. Yeah. All right. Question 4. What does separating the light from the darkness mean? We talked about that a little bit earlier, but what does that mean to separate the light from the darkness? Chuck.
Yeah. You created time.
And that's interesting. And that separating the light from the darkness doesn't really make me think of that, but I think I know where you're going. What do you mean?
Well, that time didn't exist before creation of the world. The time won't exist at the end. And the day and the night is a basic unit of time.
Right.
And we keep track of things by.
Yeah. So the, a 24-hour period, more or less.
Yeah.
Right, for reckoning time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good point. The point that Pastor makes in his notes is setting up the rules of the universe, how the universe operates, the rules of physics. But that's I think that's an interesting point. It's also time. Yeah.
It's a time to work and a time to rest.
Yeah, right.
You can't, mostly, then especially, you can't work it when it's dark.
Right, yeah. Okay. Question 5. Why evening and then morning instead of vice versa? Why not morning first and then evening? I know as an American, I always think of the morning first and then the evening. So why this order, evening and then morning?
Is that the way they counted the days? Started in the evening and went.
Right. That's the way the Hebrew people reckoned time, as a day started in the evening and finished in the morning.
But that came after creation.
Right.
So why was it evening and morning? Because that would just really give
right.
you a 12-hour right. period, not a 24-hour yeah. period.
Right. Well, I think it's also interesting to think about, well, God created light from darkness, right? The darkness came first, and then the light came. So that way of reckoning time, starting a day in the evening, really mirrors what happened in creation. Kind of an interesting point. Any other thoughts on that? I thought I saw a hand. I don't want to ignore anybody. We got 2 over there. Ladies first.
Well, I have heard in my life, probably from another pastor, what is taught Genesis class.
Yeah.
And the note says, even in the Big Bang theory, there was light before the stars. So,
interesting.
Is,
yeah. Okay. All right. George.
The concept of day and night in the seven-day period. We know from archaeological evidence that people reckon time on a seven-day basis. Very, very early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so this just all came from God. It all came from the fact that we have 7 days, or we have 9 days, 24 hours, that's just the way it is.
Right. That's an interesting point. If you do, if you think about the lunar cycle, it's more or less a 28-day cycle, correct? And so that's a perfect four-week period. And again, that suggests the orderliness of the universe. All right. All right, now the second day, verses 6 through 8. How are we doing with time? We've got 5 minutes? Okay, we can at least start that. Verse 6, and God said, we have the repetition of that, God speaking something into existence again. And God said, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky. And there was evening, and there was morning the second day. So what do you think the expanse is? What's going on there? What's God creating?
Atmosphere,
right. I think that's a good answer. It's suggested by the at verse 8, God called the expanse sky. I think sky is just another way of referring to the atmosphere. What else is going on there, though? He's separating water from water. What's that? What's he creating?
The water above and the water below. Which is the water vapor.
Right. Now, was he creating a system that was going to drop rain? Is that what was going on?
We think that there wasn't any rain prior to
it. Right.
And,
yeah.
It was just that the water was
right. I mean, we learn later on, I think it's Genesis 2, verse 5, tells us that God had not sent rain on the face of the earth yet. So some Bible scholars think that this is a different water system than what we have now. Because there was no rain until later on. So we're not quite sure what to make of that. There's some controversy about whether this is a different hydrologic system than what we have now. There may well have been. Notice also, though, in this second, the account of the second day, in verses 6 through 8, we do have the repetition of, and God said, and he speaks something into existence. But there's something missing there in the second day. One of the refrains that we see in the other days, there's something missing. You notice what it is? And it was good. Does that mean that God didn't like the atmosphere that he created? What do you think that means? Yeah?
But it is there. It's at the end of verse.
But that appears to be part of day 3, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because in day 6, at verse 8, it says evening, morning, the second day. Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of that, other than it almost appears that, you know, day 2 and 3 almost kind of go together. He's creating the water system in day 2, and then in day 3, he builds on that. So it's hard to know what to make of that. Certainly you can't conclude that, well, God didn't say that it was good, and therefore the atmosphere and everything he created was not good. You can't leap to that conclusion. Yeah.
I understand it. In day 2, it was a separation. In day 3, it was a gathering of the seas into the rivers, oceans, lakes. He gathered that water into the earth.
Yeah, it's almost as though day 2 and 3 go together. And he started a process on day 2 that he completed on day 3, right? It suggests that almost. I don't know what to make of the fact that there's no God declaring the atmosphere good. I don't know if you can make anything of that. Chuck.
It might be just that what the atmosphere, unlike for things created later, can't be seen and appreciated as much as the other things that were created.
Yeah, that could be true.
The setting up of the atmosphere, the weather system.
But, you know, also, I mean, the lack of God declaring the second day good. If you were writing a creation account, you're just making it up. Don't you think you'd catch that when you're doing your revisions? You know, oh, I forgot that. I better throw that in there somewhere. It almost lends credence to the fact that this is God inspiring Moses to write these words in the way that he wrote them. Because if it was me, certainly I'd go back. I'd catch that on the revision. I'd throw that in there.
The reader wouldn't. They'd look at the created plants, the created animals, even the created continents. And
yeah.
Say, I can see that, and that's good.
Right.
But the atmosphere, the reader couldn't relate necessarily to looking at that and saying, I can judge it.
Yeah. Good. That could be why it's not there.
I'll put the changing label.
Yeah.
Regardless of the reason why it's omitted on day two, except twice on day three.
Right.
God does include everything. It's the second day of verse 31. It says that he saw all that he had made in the spirit.
Right, exactly. I think that's a good answer. You notice, I mean, we'll get into day three next week. It was good as repeated twice there, as I recall, in day three. And then at the very end, God declares everything that he's made in the first 6 days. He declares it very good. So, anything. I think that the fact that it's left out there doesn't really mean anything at all. Yeah.
It also supports a 24-hour day if he was doing it. It took 2 days to do the atmosphere and separating the waters. You just mentioning halfway through.
It's a big job.
Day two is busy. And, you know, day three is going on, but I'm still in the process.
Right. Yeah.
Year before the day two ended, even though you may have still been in the process of doing that part of the creation
right.
that he wanted to do.
Right, yeah.
He's still recording.
Yeah, yeah.
He just wasn't doing it then.
Right, exactly. I mean, you read the account of day two and day three, they really go together.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do, frankly, so.
Eric, don't forget
yeah. chairs. Oh, are we out of time?
Yeah.
Okay, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
The chairs.
And we need some volunteers to put chairs around the tables, please. I think it's six chairs per table. Not the biblical seven.